Ah, hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 133, I was very privileged to have Susie Bolt. She is a coach, entrepreneur, leadership team coach, as well as a well-being expert. We talked about a number of different topics on the podcast today. Especially her time fighting a long-term coach. COVID, as well as we talked about what she did for her plan B and how she launched her platform. A very interesting conversation. Lots of good advice, methinks. And yeah, please sit back, enjoy the show, and please take a moment to subscribe. Have a great day, my friends, my life warriors. And yeah, enjoy the show. Have a good one. Peace. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on the podcast, episode 133, I have the lovely Susie Bolt, no relation to a certain Jamaican sprinter, but nevertheless...
I love that.
Yes. She is a coach, entrepreneur, a soundboard leadership team coach, and well-being expert. Susie, how are you today?
I'm pretty well today, actually, which is a really nice thing to be able to say, because as someone who's been kind of talking about and having to deal with COVID, long COVID, since literally exactly a year ago to this date, I am today feeling really well.
You know what? I'm glad to hear you're feeling well. And we did touch on this beforehand with the whole, on the antihistamine side. One of the things we, you don't really hear about is long COVID. You basically hit, when you hear COVID, someone's had it 2 weeks and they're back out on their feet or it's gone.
Right,
quite a negative way.
Yeah,
you don't actually go, oh yeah, long COVID. What and what is the sort of definition, apart from the obvious statement of long COVID? Is it a month, 2 months? What?
Well, why don't I tell you a little bit about why it's different for those people who have the kind of 2 to 3 weeks shortness of breath? Maybe they had a cough. Maybe they had, a sore throat, headaches, whatever, because when I got COVID, it literally was a year ago, exactly. Mm. And we'd all just gone into lockdown and my husband had just got a new job commuting up to London from Brighton. he was a bit okay, well, I need to go and do the induction. I'm working for the government. They said, just come in and let's do the induction and we'll see how we go. And off he went on the train and I was already in lockdown, right? The kids were already out of school. And I was thinking, I don't know if this is a good idea. But he was so keen, he'd waited for such a long time to start this new job. And he went, okay, I'm going to be really safe. It'll be fine. And the trains were empty, but off he went. Sure enough, about a week later, I sat down on the bed and felt like I had been poisoned by something really, really extreme. So the symptoms that I started with were a sore throat and a fever. So they were kind of the normal symptoms that I was reading about at the time. I didn't ever have a cough. And I didn't develop shortness of breath until about month 4 or 5. It was the poisoning feeling for me that was the most extraordinary one. So I it was like having salmonella, but mixed with the kind of malaria, sort of chills and fevery kind of sort of strange hallucinations and bizarre dreams. And I sat on the bed and I went, this has got to be COVID. Whatever it is they're saying on the news, this has got to be it too. So I don't have a cough, but this is the weirdest illness I've ever had, the combination of things. And I've since heard another academic who specializes in infectious diseases. He also got it. And he said, it's like having malaria, dengue fever and salmonella. And I went, yes, that was exactly the experience. But of course, right back then in March, you get something like that. And they're like, you call up and you go, I'm really ill. And they go, Are you dying? Are your lips blue? Okay, well, don't get on the, just get off the phone, woman. You're like, okay. So no one's interested in helping you, and you're on this journey, pretty much convinced it's COVID, but you can't get a test, and you know, because they hadn't even made tests until a while later.
Oh, no. And my
symptoms just grew from there. So I managed those for a while. I could still work. So you can see a studio behind me here. I teach yoga, and I just brought all of my classes online. And had set up a kind of online well-being platform with mindfulness and, you know, HIIT classes and Pilates. So I'd gone, wow, great, kind of business revolution. Here we go. Let's get it all online. Let's do something completely different. Really exciting. And then started to have this illness happen. And I kind of pushed through it because that's what you do, right? When you have a cold that you can just about manage with in the past, you just kind of keep going.
Yeah.
The body can sort of cope with it. But with COVID, what we now know is that actually, if you do that early on, especially if it's combined with multiple symptoms. So when I say multiple symptoms, I'm talking about the GI, I'm talking about sore throat, fever, so shortness of breath and a cough, yes. But once you have more than sort of 2 to 3, maybe 4 symptoms, then you know you're more likely at risk now to have something which is going to last a lot longer than that kind of 2 to 3 weeks. Of a standard COVID experience. So mine developed into nerve damage. So I had a stammer. I had the sensitivity to hearing. I couldn't hear my children around me. I had to wear ear defenders. Developed real issues with my heart. So massive heart palpitations. And, you know, I literally went downhill and downhill and downhill and downhill. And by week 9 or 10, I would say I was probably the most ill I've ever been in my life. I was completely bedbound, was hardly able to eat or keep food in. My heart rate was through the roof, even at rest, you know, even at complete and utter bed rest, my heart rate was all over the place. I developed a pain in my lungs that was so extreme, I couldn't sit up or move because the pain would be too intense. I just felt like I was waking up every morning and a new symptom was emerging. And it would be like being in a computer game. It was like, what's going to happen today? It was terrifying at times. So I'd kind of ridden the crest of the wave going, this is okay. I'm not dying. I'm not dying. There's others dying. I'm not dying. I've got away with it. But that there was definitely 2 days after my birthday. So May the 25th, I rang the doctor, actually know a friend who had come round, so she'd kind of broken all the rules. I was desperate. So my husband had gone out for a run for the first time. He just needed to leave the house. He'd been really stressed looking after me. He said, are you going to be okay for an hour? I just need to go out for a run. And in that hour, I deteriorated so much. I just kind of FaceTimed a friend, didn't say anything. I was too ill. And she said, oh my God, I'm coming. Mm. She came around, looked at me, took my phone, called my doctor and went, what do we do with her, because I think she's dying? And he went, I'm just going to send an ambulance. I don't know what to say. He said, I'm seeing this more and more with people who got an infection early on in March, but I don't know what to say. We don't know why this is happening. So in I go to A&E in an ambulance. You know, my children are waving me off like, well, when is she coming back? And it's like, well, we don't know. And they do all the tests, you know, and I'm in there with other people who have got multiple blood clots on their lungs. So I'm not in the kind of the acute COVID where you go in because you're recently infected and your body goes into instant shutdown. I'm in what they call the kind of pink ward, where you're not infectious, but you're suffering from post-COVID infection damage. So the body's just kind of exploding. And I'm in there with 3 other people who have all got blood clots on their lungs. And they're saying to me, we need to check you really quickly to see that you don't also have that, because the pain in the lungs and the heart, those are big keys for a blood clot. So you could, you know, you could be close to death, but we don't know. So let's check you out.
That's reassuring.
I was really glad at that point that I'd gone in, right?
Because, yeah.
It was a bit like, really, I don't really want to go into hospital. It's going to be quite stressful. And I'm already feeling like the worst I've ever felt.
Yeah.
I was glad I was there. And they did all the blood tests and I stayed there for quite a while. And they came to my bedside and the guy went, look, we don't know very much about this yet, but we know that you're not going to die of it. We know that. She said, so I want to get you out of here as fast as you can. This is not a place for you to be, because what we don't know is, even in this early stage, if you can catch it again. So I said, I'm going to send you home. It was like 4 or 5 in the morning. You know, it was the most ill I'd ever been. They didn't even say, why don't we put you somewhere for the night? They were just like, go away.
Yeah, well, like, put it this way. Look, one of the worst places you can be on Earth, especially this time last year, would be anywhere... Whew, a hospital? No.
Oh,
if you broke your foot, you might as well like go, can you come to me rather than I go
to me. But also they were so overwhelmed, you know, and I could see that. I was inside and I was watching, and you know, as I was kind of wheeled out to the exit so they could literally tick me off a trolley and kind of reclaim my bed. Out, madam.
Gone.
But I could see all these kind of teams of people working around people in the acute red bit as they wheeled me through. And it was then that I realized this is not a simple virus. This is a complex virus that goes in and causes multiple organ failure. And we know now that that's exactly what happens. You know, someone could go in there and within a 5 to 10 minute period, their heart, their lungs, their kidneys, their liver will all have been suddenly, you know, into shutdown. Terrifying.
I can understand why it's terrifying, but like the thing which I think people would find surprising, because okay, we've all heard the stories about okay, people with like pre-existing conditions, or if you happen to be fat, overweight, like sedentary, like yeah, if you're fat, overweight, sedentary, blah blah blah, or not active in any way, it's going to hit you the worst.
Right.
The thing about yourself, you are a yoga instructor. You are a person who takes fitness very seriously. It's not just a lifestyle. It's your job, career, right, and pretty much everything outside of your family existence.
Yeah.
And for you to sort of take you down.
Yeah.
Down hard, take you down like to the point where you're like, I'm not too sure if I'll be able to
right
that, and I don't even want to know the sort of dark conversations what went on in your head at some point. But
yeah, it was when I heard my husband whispering to his so he has a cousin who's a GP, and I could hear them having this really quiet conversation in the room next door, and basically the GP was saying, she's really ill, you have got to do something. You've got to get some help. And he was like, I don't know. No one is helping. I call 111 and they say, can she breathe? Well, if she can breathe, then don't bring her in, you know. It was just like, oh, okay. Really hard.
No, absolutely. And like, this is the thing. Like, from that point to like, well, basically now, like, when did you find yourself like, on the sort of turn, on the sort of mend? I know you mentioned something about the antihistamines, like where you were at the first night, but when did you feel like I'm on the road to recovery?
So I suppose for me, the turning point was actually the gift of going into A&E and them saying to me, you're not gonna die of this. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, is there anything that you can offer me with regards to advice? And he went, no. The only advice I can give you is you're not going to die. So I came home, and that was the point that I went, right, there's got to be others like me. There has to be other people experiencing the same thing. And because he'd said, you know, the doctor team, the team at the hospital had said, we're seeing lots of people like you, but we're just telling you, you're not the ones that will die. But it just might be a while. It just might take you a while. That's all we can say. So I thought, okay, so first of all, I'll reach out and connect to those other people. So where's a great place to go? Facebook. So I started looking, you know, COVID support groups. Sure enough, oh, they were densely populated already. There was, you know, one group I found straight away, which had 7,000 or 8,000 people in it from around the world.
Yeah.
And I started to go, okay, look, these people are talking about exactly the same things as me. Oh, this is good. So this is good, right? This isn't just me. This is everybody else that's here too. So that felt reassuring. And then I went, well, what I know, as a coach, as a yoga teacher of 24 years, as someone that works with well-being, mental health, I know that stress is going to be a really big exacerbator of this issue, and that cortisol causes inflammation, and that, you know, if my body is kind of stuck in that stress mode in the sympathetic nervous system response, what I need to do is shift it into rest and repair, because I feel like, you know, my body felt like it was in panic, total and utter panic. I was having adrenaline surges. There was just, it was like I was trapped in a bear, in a room with a bear, with it, you know, like there's a bear going to eat you. That's how my body felt. This panic. That's what the body was doing. So I started to look into the autonomic nervous system and realize that there was a thing called dysautonomia, where basically you switch from, you know, normally a healthy system will have periods of stress and then it will calm back down and it will have periods where the body can rest, digest, repair. And the more I started to research this, I realized, my God, let's look at all of the symptoms associated with a chronic long-term sort of manifestation of being stuck in that sympathetic nervous system. And it's symptoms that affect your breathing apparatus, your ability to focus your eyes, your ability to produce saliva, your ability to sleep. Your gut tract is really affected because literally everything that's connected up to the brain through that system can be affected with an actual symptom. We can create these symptoms. So COVID sort of switches people into this dysautonomic state, and actually part of the recovery process, unless of course COVID has gone in and damaged your organs, which for many people it has, you can start to do some work to calm yourself back down with yoga, with meditation, with guided relaxation, with breathing exercises. And that's one of the key ones that people are beginning to learn now. And there's places like Mount Sinai Hospital in New York who are running an open to anyone breathing program to help with long COVID, because they have finally gone, what we really understand is people are being stuck in sympathetic stress response. The body just thinks it's terrified all the time. So it's doing all of these symptoms. And one of the key things that we know about stress is if you slow the breathing rate down, the body has to calm down. And so they're using it now as the program to help people with long COVID, because it helps to get them out of a really short, stuck, shallow breath cycle. Literally, people have forgotten how to breathe. If you've been ill for that long, or if you were affected acutely at the beginning with shortness of breath, you've forgotten how to breathe. Mm. And it's all stuck in that top chest, and that top chest breathing is panic breathing. So people are panic breathing, and their bodies are going, well, I must be stressed, so I'm gonna do all these symptoms. And actually learning to calm it down and do slow breathing is exactly some of the stuff that you can do to start helping yourself. So I set up a Facebook group, which now has about 3,500 people in it.
Nice.
Well, posting material. So I thought, you know, actually what's going to make me get out of bed and practice if I record it and share it with people? So I would kind of get out of bed, crawl up here, get on my mat and do a little kind of 20 minute, okay, we're just going to do some breathing. And I know how you feel, because that's how I'm feeling. And, you know, I know it can make you dizzy, or I know it can make your heart rate come up, but actually just stay with it. And I started posting this material and people were responding. And then the group started to grow and they were going, oh my God, you get it. This is the first time we've kind of listened to someone that understands what we're going through. And I was like, right, it's so important to find other people that are on that recovery with you, because then they understand, you feel safe with them. You know, people come to me now and they know I know what they're going through, because I've been there, you know, I've done that journey. And I've, from that point on, so I set up the Facebook group in June. From that point on, I've learned so much about recovery and all the different things that are needed to be part of that recovery. So it's not just about, you know, slowing your breathing down and, hey, you're going to get better. There's a whole load of other work to be done, but
yeah, I can imagine, because like this is the thing, like I think what with the breathing and everything like that, sort of when people often say combating stress, but when you bring combat into anything, that is another form of stress. But dealing with like stress and like all of the things to help that breath come like calm down. I think that's a fantastic thing. But the environment we were in for pretty much the whole of last year, if like it was one of the things, if you saw it on the streets by them being deserted, you saw it in the way people would act and behave to each other, people literally crossing the roads to avoid each other.
Yeah.
And you had a 24-hour news cycle pumping out all that information. It must have, like, I imagine when you were like, look, okay, look, by all means, listen to the news, maybe for about an hour, 15 minutes a day, and then basically don't watch it anymore because you're just feeding back into that cycle. I wonder was there any sort of other strategies which came out of the group discussion to help relieve the stress, to help get people better faster?
So one of the big things that people have learned, so, you know, obviously there was a lot of people on this journey who were from the medical profession. Mm. Yeah. There's a lot of researchers as well, and documentary filmmakers, and people who were like, shit, why is this happening?
Well, you know what? Your children would be ashamed of your partner.
Sorry. They do shout at me, I swear. Anyway, they were also very, you know, moved about, you know, why is this happening to so many of us? And they were doing some great work. So there's been a guy called Jez Mendinger, and he was producing really short little films, very, very poorly and unwell person, but committed to finding out why, you know, so if I didn't do the 3 weeks and if I wasn't hospitalized and put on an intubator, why am I ill like this? What is this version of it? So he was doing research and talking to people and creating these little films that he was sharing into the community, which have now been watched, you know, many, many, many thousands of times by people all over the world. And where he got to at a certain point was, oh, we're starting to realize that there's a connection between histamine and what's happening with people's bodies.
Mm.
So, and when you understand what histamine is, it's not just, you don't just take an antihistamine because you have hay fever. We have histamine in us, right? Food has histamine in it. Histamine is produced by the body as a response to a situation that it's not particularly happy with, but you can produce levels of it which are fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can produce massive levels of it, which causes a complete kind of haywire crash in the system. And that links back into the autonomic nervous system and stress. So if you're someone that's ever had asthma or hay fever or an irritable bowel syndrome or, you know, any kind of allergies or response like that, or even an autoimmune issue in the past, your levels of histamine can be really, really, really high with long COVID because it's the body's way of going, there's a bear in the room, we must fight, we must kill it with all of this stuff. Now, I discovered early on, luckily, the joy of taking massive doses of antihistamine by accident, because I couldn't sleep. That's one of the side effects of having dysautonomia. The adrenaline levels just keep you awake. I was at my most ill, desperate to sleep, and I couldn't sleep. And my doctor just kind of scrabbling around went, well, I put the elderly on antihistamines to help them when they can't sleep. So it can't do you any harm. Just take some. So I was, great, you know, anything. Because he'd tried me on sleeping tablets and they hadn't touched the side. And I was a bit like, okay, we need something. So these are pretty safe. They're not addictive, right? They're not going to have a massive side effect. So I started back in July taking really strong antihistamines at night. And within 24 hours, I went, oh my God, some of my symptoms have gone. This is amazing. This is kind of weird. Is that supposed to have happened? And then obviously the more people that were also trying that for insomnia also were saying, oh good, it stopped all the rash that was happening on my skin and it stopped all of this stuff. Like, it's like there's a kind of fire going inside your body. And for me, I felt like it put out about 50% of the fire. And it was a really great moment because then I went, there's got to be a link here. This isn't just about the fact I finally had a good night's sleep. There's got to be a link with histamine. And of course, you know, there were other people out there, researchers, consultants looking into that too, because they were starting to go, there's got to be a link. Mm. So the more we know now is, you know, there is this thing called mast cell activation syndrome, where the mast cells, which is all tied up with your histamine production, go into kind of, you know, super overdrive and produce massive doses of histamine. And that's one of the things, one of the many things that is happening for people with long COVID. So a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people are having some good results by taking histamine out of their diet. So cutting out foods like tomato, banana, avocado, fermented foods, cheese, all the stuff you really want to eat, cutting it all out and paring it down, but also taking antihistamines. There's an H1 and an H2. So there's the type that you normally get, and then there's a different type that you need to get as well. But, you know, that is definitely helping some people recover quicker. But I think on the whole, from what I can tell from my Facebook group and the kind of work that I'm doing, because I now lead live classes with people from around Europe and the UK, it is, the key is about learning to retrain your breathing mm-hmm. and calming down and also feeling supported, because a lot of people have gone through something so incredibly stressful and upsetting and been alone and been kind of, you know, by the sort of the health system that would normally say, yes, come in, you're very poorly, we will look after you, we can fix you. That's a totally different experience. You know, they've gone, we don't know how to fix you, really. We're beginning to understand now, a year later, but we still don't have a pill. You know, there's no pill that we can give you that will take this away. And so it's trial and error. And, you know, there's thousands and thousands of us that were the guinea pigs of this experience, just making it up as we went along. And trialing things, you know, and then other people would come onto the Facebook group and go, hey, have you tried this drug? And everyone would go, where'd you get that? Let's try it. All sorts of things, because you're desperate.
Yeah.
You know, it's been going on for months by this point, and you're desperate.
No, I can understand that. Like, basically, being sort of desperate and, like, desperate and scared is a combination which sometimes makes people do some crazy things.
Yeah.
When it comes to sort of like trying to figure out antihistamines, yes, by all means, like
exactly,
that's fine. But other things which most probably could have cropped up, there must have been like maybe not, leave that alone.
Well, that was one thing, and you know, I think one of the things to remember is that, you know, what's great is you've got a lot, if someone posts something about trying something out, you've got a lot of doctors in those groups going, for God's sake, don't do that. Yeah. Or make sure you're not taking any other medication if you are. So actually it's quite a knowledgeable group of people. They're quite active. You know, they're out there lobbying for change as well and getting help. So it's a very useful thing. But there's definitely some strange things. There was someone recommending, someone that I'm working with actually, to take a drug called ivermectin, which is actually a horse wormer. But there's a lot of people who've been trying this drug and going, it's actually really helped.
No. It's like, anyone listening?
No. Please seek medical advice before you start experimenting with drugs that aren't even for the human body.
Yeah, just like, what dose do you think's right?
How do I work it out from a horse?
Well, a human is around about 5 horses. Maybe
horse about, way.
No.
I think it gives you an idea about how desperate people are, right?
Yeah. No, like, I can understand that. But, like, this is the thing. Like, over here, at least it looks like there's light at the end of the tunnel. We are sort of, like, coming out on the other side. Look, it's far too early to do a victory dance because...
No.
Because, look, we, like, a couple weeks' time, they're going to ease up restrictions here in the UK. Like, and sort of get our lives back a little bit. Like, thankfully, the sort of infection rate and, like, deaths from 28 days has been considerably down. We've getting more and more people first round vaccinations. And it looks like we are going in the right direction. Like,
because we haven't been mixing.
Well, hey, we haven't been. But, like, it comes down to this. Like, it'll be interesting to see how it goes because, look, if you look at last year, it's not exact a like for like copy, because now there is the vaccine, now there is other things, now there is greater knowledge on how to combat. Because your experience with COVID being a long term like sufferer, it gives it gives people maybe a little bit more clarity about how extreme this can go.
Yes.
Because you hear the light side and you hear the most extreme side, death, but you don't hear the sort of long term, if this is on you, like hitting you in day in, day out, what that's like. And I think with this sort of turnaround, we shall see how things go in the next, say, for the rest of the year. If the numbers stay, like the R number, which if that stays well below 0.5, not getting close to that 0.7 or 1, that's great. And fingers crossed, we'll be looking at better times by this time next year.
Absolutely. I think one of the things we don't know yet, because of course the vaccine is designed to protect against getting it extremely badly. So now, you know, no one that has long COVID, not no one, but most people that have got this longer version that weren't kind of hospitalized and intubated and put in a coma and all of those things, are not described as having had a severe case of COVID. So this, I'm a bit like, okay, well, does that mean that this variation is still available? that's what I'm kind of curious to find out. So, you know, what we know is it doesn't stop you from getting it, but it hopefully prevents people from dying, which is great. Okay. I think what we need to do, obviously, and it's happening, is the study on post-vaccination. Does this version still happen? Is it still possible to get with what's called the milder version, but then continue to have these symptoms for a really long time? Because I know people who, you know, I am one of the lucky ones in the long COVID gang. I am one of the ones that can exercise now without it putting me in bed for 3 weeks. I can work, I can think, you know, my brain fog has gone mostly. I just put it down to age now. But, you know, there's a lot of people.
Come on. You're not that old. Come on now.
Well, you know, as a woman of a certain age, there's a certain kind of blurriness that happens to our cognitive abilities.
I'm not going to say, I'm not touching that one with
a... Don't say anything about that. It's okay for me to comment.
No. I'm far too small to be like in that sort of kind of fire. Like, he said, what? Counsel him. No. I didn't want to be involved. No. Keep that away from me.
It's fine. I'll say no more about it. We won't even go there. But, you know, I'm 49 in May, and a little bit of brain fog every now and then is okay. You know, I'm fine with it. But anyway, what I think I was trying to say was, I know a lot of people who still haven't been able to go for a walk. They still, you know, they can't go for a walk because it causes them relapse. They have chronic fatigue symptoms. They have chronic brain fog. There's, you know, they've lost their jobs. Many people have lost their jobs because they've been on sick now for a year, and people have gone, well, it doesn't look like you're ever going to come back, so maybe we should get rid of you. That's beginning to happen more and more.
Well, like, this is the thing with regards to the sort of job situation, like I would say this sort of sway of people which have lost their jobs, and basically, like, yeah, I was employed one day and then the job's gone the next. Basically healthy and ready to go people, and basically people have been like poorly and sick. I think that's been one of the sort of great like tragedies of this. And when you mentioned like, yeah, people being by themselves, I think the sort of mental aspect of it all has been kind of largely ignored, and like the amount of people which have been lost from that, because they can't have those sort of key bonds of support, which maybe it was like going down to a small meeting every now and then to meet people face to face. And trying to do that over Zoom, it doesn't have the same thing for them. And when someone might pick up on something like, hey, are you okay? And that that 5 minute conversation might be the difference between them
totally
doing something extreme or them having a great day.
So, oh, totally. So I just, so the business that I set up, the 360 Mind Body Soul, it's called, I sort of invented it as I was coming down with COVID, unbeknownst to me. And it ran, you know, I got it to a point where I could step back and be ill, but I brought in teachers that were just running it through the platform that I'd set up. And actually we just had our first birthday party on Thursday, and I had about 50 odd people show up just to kind of reminisce on the year and share what's been great about it. And there was quite a few people who said, you know, living on their own as they were, the structure of showing up to a class daily and to have other people and to have fun and a bit of banter and, you know, because I like laughter. I think laughter is one of the best things for the soul you could ever have, better than any medicine. And I just said, you know, it's a really important thing to note that actually this has got so many people through some of the most challenging times of their lives by simply being there. You know, you could log in, and I'm still doing it. You can log in, you can have some fun, you can work out, you can do yoga, you can do your mindfulness, whatever you need. But there's that lovely human connection. And I know it's on Zoom, but if that was all we've got, then it's enough just about to have a kind of, there's other people out there moment, you know. And I had some amazing feedback from people saying it stopped them from sinking into a really big sort of cycle of despair or fear or anxiety, you know, because they knew that every day they could show up and it would be us there going, hi, yeah. Hey, where have you been? Why weren't you here yesterday? Come on, get on your mat.
No, but this all kind of ties into, like, I was going to ask you basically 2020. What was your plan B?
Right. Well, the plan B was basically to do that. And I didn't have one, you know, because my other job, and I'm not really doing it at the moment, as you might imagine, but my other job was as a workshop facilitator, primarily within the academic sector. And I'd worked with a team from Oxford University on about March the 10th. That was the last live workshop that I did. And my workshop with them was talking about COVID, it's coming. What are we doing? As a university, what's the response? What are we doing? And I'd run that workshop, I'd facilitated that workshop. And as I took the train back from Oxford to Brighton, I sat there going, oh my God, what am I gonna do? Because this is real. And I've heard some data from people within the university who had contact with people in China and various other places who are going, this is so big. This is so big, you have no idea. You can't even get your head around it, it's so big. And as I sat there on the train going, I think I'm just about to lose all of my income. I'm just about to lose all my yoga classes, all of the training and workshops I had booked in for the year. It's all gonna go. What am I gonna do? But also on the counter to that, I've been learning to box with my personal trainer at the gym. I felt amazing, and I was like, I'm not giving that up. I don't want to now not box. I don't want to now not be fit and just be stuck in my house, you know, with my kids all going a bit crazy. So I said to him, I went to the gym and said to him, right, what if the gym said to you about work? And he said, well, they're just going to close it and we're all on 0 hours contract and we're not going to get any work. And I went, well, that's rubbish. I said, right, I'm going to employ you. And I said, it's going to be a bit crazy for a bit, but I'm going to employ you. Let's set this thing up, right? You're going to come onto my platform. Let's set up a platform. Let's create a virtual gym. And I want you to teach boxing, and I want you to teach HIIT and all the stuff that I love doing with you. I want you to teach it, not just to me, but to as many people as I can get my hands on. Because obviously I've had quite a big cohort of yoga students. And I was like, guys, you're not just going to do yoga now, you're going to do more. And they were like, all right then, let's try it out. And so that's how that kind of grew. So literally overnight, I had tried to figure out, how do I do this? How do I get my website to reflect that this is even a thing? So I'd spent one manic evening feeling very ill about 2 weeks after we sort of set it up, building a website that could kind of manage how it works, because people were trying to book with me individually for each class, and I was just like, Oh my God, it's really stressful.
No.
And it grew, you know, there was people coming in because they were friends with, there was people who had their friends in Bali and in LA, and they were like, well, we want to come and do your classes because our friends are doing them with you. And it was amazing. You know, I was connecting grandparents up with grandchildren. They were coming into class together. There was like 200 people suddenly going, we want to come to your class. And it was a bit manic. And all of that, I was trying to manage all of it whilst sliding down the slope with COVID, getting more and more ill.
Mm.
And I think that's one of the reasons why I got so ill, because I just couldn't stop. So one of my first kind of pieces of advice to anyone who gets ill with COVID is, for goodness sake, treat it differently. You cannot just push through this one. Even if your body seems to be saying that you can, don't. Because it will set off a kind of storm in your body that will take much longer to recover from.
Yeah, but that's the crazy thing about with regards to COVID. Like everyone seems to get it in multiple different ways. There are people like yourselves, unfortunately, which like have it long term. There are people which they lose their sense of taste and lose their sense of smell, right. And it's like nothing at all. And there's people which just like shrug it off, like it's like nothing to them. And you kind of go, what is the sort of factors? What is making it be like shrug it off, or
right.
Sense of smell, or is it long term, or in the worst case, people die from it?
And you
like it's been very sort of difficult to nail down, because the reason why I sort of brought up you're a fit person, like doing your fitness, your yoga, and everything like this, because there was one point around about this time last year where members of the NBA basketball teams across the United States, everyone was getting it left, right, and center. There was this, I can't remember his name, but he was like this jackass doing a press conference, like touching the mic, going, oh, not going to get COVID. Oh, not going to get COVID. And about 3 days later, he had COVID and he had to do an apology. And it was like, okay. But the majority of those guys just shrugged it off. And it's like quite mental. There was this comedian over in the States where he went down hard, and he was like about 2 minutes away from being put on the ventilator before the doctor went, no, don't do it, because you will die if you go on this ventilator. So it's like, right, it's mad.
Yeah. Well, obviously I was in a house with, you know, my two children and my husband, you know, and probably I'm guessing that he was the one that brought it in. Did he have any symptoms? No. Did my children? Probably for a day before me, I looked at them and went, oh, you look like you've got a bit of a cold. Mm. They kind of went gray and their eyes were watery. They had a bit of a fever and my son had a bit of a cough. And I went, okay, we've all been in the house and you've not been to school. So whatever this is new. And next day I got symptoms. So, you know, but that was it for them. They were done with it 24 hours. And over. Great. You know, my husband is Indian, but also very fit, a little tiny bit younger than me. Nothing for him. Nothing at all.
It's like, you say that with such venom, just like, nothing for him. Nothing. It's like, come on, you SOB. Come on, get sick. Just looking at it, just like,
exactly.
Just like licking a spoon. Ah, go on, eat. Like,
well, you know, obviously, you have a lot of time lying there when you're ill going, where did I get this from? And then, you know, looking at him going, why didn't you get sick? Why is it?
You just like look at him going, you had to go to that induction, you son of a bitch. You had to go to London. Yeah, because it's sitting in Brighton. Yeah. You know what? They would have been they were government. They would have been happy to let you go. Just like, hey, but you had to
exactly.
Go. Like, it was right. You who brought this into this house.
Yeah. So actually what I started to understand was, because I'd had glandular fever when I was 18, that predisposed me, because it's an autoimmune malfunction, it, you know, that predisposed me to having a sensitivity to having longer COVID now.
Ah, so basically you didn't realize you were in that sort of high at-risk group, but at the time there was no way of telling.
No. And, you know, I'm fit and healthy. You know, I haven't had any issues with an autoimmune disease since I had glandular fever. But anything like that, it's like the little photo album of your immune system stays there all the time. And something like COVID will come along and go, oh, brilliant. You've just created the perfect environment for me to just come and make myself at home. It's the same with people with asthma, with hay fever, with any kind of allergies. There's just a little dysfunction in the photo album, ready, just waiting. You don't have to be obese. You don't have to have, you know, diabetes. You don't have to have various other, you know, life-limiting underlying health conditions. You know, would you call me someone with an underlying health condition? No, not at all. I wouldn't refer myself either. But interestingly, neither have the doctors, because have I been bumped up the vaccination list? No. So at the moment, I'm still just as able to catch it again as everybody else. And it could go worse for me this time, because I definitely know people who've done it two times and been more ill the second time than they were the first. And I'm like, I don't want that.
Like, what I would simply say is, if your husband has any sort of need to do an induction day again, just like, yeah, kick him in the leg. Go,
guess
no.
Where he is right now, in London.
Oh, okay. Well, well, look, as a person who lives in London, Londoner right now, yeah, all I've got to simply say is, anywhere which is office-based, there is literally hardly any people.
I know, they take it in turns to go in. He works for the government. The part of his role is he can't do some of it from home, and he has to go in. He's a team leader. And so it's like, it's okay, you know, and he's been doing that. He only took 3 weeks off when I was at my most unwell. The rest of the time he's had to go in around 1 or 2 days a week anyway. So we're used to it now. I'm used to the risk. It's okay.
That's, I can just see you like, okay, you know what you have to do. Hour outside on the porch, any sign of a I was just clearing my throat, baby. I was just clearing my
exactly,
throat.
Exactly. Yeah. Whenever he comes in, I'm like, don't come in, don't come near me, upstairs, wash the clothes off, don't touch me, don't just stay away. But you know, I think we know so much now that you're hardly able to prevent yourself from, you know, not catching it, because if you're breathing the air that someone's breathing, then you know.
Yeah,
it spreads. So we've relaxed on the hand sanitizer a bit now. It's like, okay.
That large order from Amazon had just make sure you just step under the hand sanitizer, kids.
Exactly. Rubbing it off.
Yeah. If you're not covered in Purell, you're not gonna be in here.
Exactly.
I'm going to have to ask, because look, you are a former student of Middlesex University.
I am.
Yes, as am I.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What did you study?
I studied like psychology and sociology. Oh. Like I did a little bit of IT beforehand. So I was, let's see, I was in Enfield, and I was also in Trent Park. You studied theatre studies, is that correct?
Yeah.
Were you in Trent Park?
All the time. That was my only base.
Where were your halls of residence, may I ask?
Gubby. On site.
Okay, you were one of the, oh my Lord. That must have been, oh, that's crazy. Because
it was crazy.
Yeah, because this is the thing. With Trent Park, which, okay, what people don't realize, Trent Park is a former campus of Middlesex University. It's at, oh my God, What train station?
It's one before Cock Foster's.
Like, basically, you get off at Cock Foster's. Oh, I can't even remember. No, I can't remember. No.
It's the one before Cock Foster's.
Yes, it's the station before Cock Foster's. And all I've got to simply say is it's down a road called Snakes Lane. It's like about a mile and a half to 2 miles of, like, if, like, all I could say is it's the perfect horror movie road.
No, it really was. Yeah, you never walked Snake's Lane. Never. No.
No. But this is the thing. During the weekdays, you could get on in and out of campus quite easily.
On the bus.
Yeah, but what? I never was there over the weekends.
The bus ran all the time. It's okay. Yeah, don't worry.
but if you were out and about late at night, there's only one way you could do it, taxi. And if you're not doing the taxi. What was your time like at Middlesex University? Because you went earlier than me.
90 to 93 I was there. Do you know, it was a really, so what we haven't described is what Trent Park was like. So yes, there's this really long lane, but it's a stately home, the former home of Siegfried Sassoon. It's now been turned into a museum. It's very beautiful. And it's a stately home in beautiful grounds. And I grew up in the northwest of England and was like, I really want to move to London. I need to go to Middlesex University, this particular course I want to do. Oh, and look, it happens to be a really, really beautiful place. Win-win, right? So I get to have access to London, but I also live in the countryside, which is essentially what we were doing. And I did a performing arts degree, and it was a little bit like the movie Fame. And it was hilarious. And I suppose the thing that makes all of these kind of courses the sort of the complete experience is the people that you're doing it with. And I made some amazing friends there, and we had the time of our lives. You know, we were wild. It was great because it was just, you know, they encourage you to be totally uninhibited and to be creative and to just experiment. And that's what we did. It was brilliant. Yeah. Do you know what? It set me up because obviously now I don't work in theatre. I did for about 9 years. I worked as a movement director. And then I moved into training and kind of team and psychology and all that kind of stuff. And every now and again, I have these really funny moments where I'm standing in a room full of people who are so smart. And, you know, they've trained at the top places in the world. We're talking Yale, we're talking Harvard, we're talking Oxford, Cambridge. And they're looking at me going, Susie, what are we doing? And, you know, how are we going to do this? And I stand there and I'm like, I did a performing arts degree, you know, I was a movement director and yet here I am, I've ended up here. But the thing that it gave me was just the best confidence ever. I can walk into a situation and be like, hey, what are we doing? Okay, that's cool. Yeah, I can do that. That's fine. And I'm not fazed by anyone's seniority. I don't play that game at all. I've always worked for myself. And so I just am who I am, you know, and I show up and I'm comfortable in myself. And I think that allows me to show up anywhere in the world. And, you know, I have run workshops with people all over the world and just walk into a room and go, hi, how are you? Are you okay? Great. Okay. Let's have a bit of fun. Let's get where we need to go and let's go. And I kind of love that I did that course, but that I didn't end up going into theatre for long because, it was sort of my calling, but not really my calling. I think my calling has been very much around helping people and helping people realize themselves. But actually right now, you know, it's about, I now am spending my time helping other people on their long COVID journey. That seems to take up a massive amount of my time because I've learned a lot, but also I'm comfortable to go, I'll hold a group. I'll open my space up and invite you in. And even just kind of doing one-to-one, people have now approached me and say, will you be my COVID coach? And I'm like, is that a thing? Okay. If you feel like you want me to, then I'll happily work with you one-to-one. And that's, you know, that's an amazing thing. So I had a great time and I did do some work in theatre, but realised it wasn't my sector, I think.
Wasn't your sector, but wasn't your true calling.
But it wasn't my true calling. Calling.
But yeah. Brilliant.
And you did psychology. So where did you take that to start with?
Where did I take that? I did that in Enfield. I did more like the cognitive side of it. So sort of artificial intelligence research methods. That was all fun and games. Like, yeah, no one told me about the maths and research methods. And that's
hard. Yeah, there's loads of stats.
Yes. I did that for my time there. did the foundation, like, to get in, and basically from there it was like, yes, free into the world I went. And I, like anyone who does their degree, I went into sales rather than actually doing anything related to it. But yeah, found my sort of calling in sales, and I basically, I was doing that up until last year, September. And yes, the dreaded axe fell upon me. No, October. Like, yes, redundancy came because I was in the event sector.
Okay. One of
the hardest hit sectors.
Yeah.
And yeah, like right now, just fending off the wolf and doing this podcast, talking to lovely and interesting people like yourself.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Have you thought about, like, you have a YouTube channel from what I've seen, and done stuff with yoga on there, and I've seen you've done an interview or two. Like, have you thought about doing something more like what we're doing right now, or like, yeah, more on the sort of podcast side of things, like where you're the host rather than being the guest?
Where I'm the host. Well, it's interesting because, of course, I am thinking about it. You know, the thing that I want to do at the moment is tell the story, you know, because there's now hundreds of thousands of people out there just in our country alone coming to terms with what I've come to terms with. And actually, for me, telling that story is really important. You know, they sort of estimate that 1 in 10 people that goes on to catch and develop symptoms of COVID will have the journey that I've had, or a similar one, or, you know, a variation along those themes. And that's a lot of people, you know, who are stuck, really not knowing how to help themselves get better. That's a lot of people. That's affecting our workforce. That's affecting people's abilities to parent. That's affecting them their ability to look after themselves. You know, it's huge. Mm. So I want that story told. So I've been thinking about, you know, how do I do that? Which is why I put myself on the kind of podcast interviewee place. I am obviously also someone that loves to talk and loves to talk to people and to find out, you know, more about what they're doing. And there was someone that the podcast of a woman called Nicola Sachs I've been listening to, and she talks a lot about healing chronic conditions. And so when I started to listen to some of her stuff, everything that she said made complete sense. And I think I might get in touch with her and go, hey, you and I should do a joint podcast. Let's have a conversation, because, you know, her journey to recovery is really similar to the recovery from COVID. Because actually, I think one of the things that I'm really coming to terms with is the fact that you can't just treat the symptoms. You have to treat the life. So a lot of people, if you go into kind of functional medicine, which, you know, I've started reading a lot more about, you start to understand that divorce that you had 10 years ago, that really stressful time when maybe you lost your parent, or that, you know, that when you were made redundant and it was a really, really big impact on you. All of those things, they sit in the body and they impact the immune system, and they sort of, they compromise us. And actually, if you haven't worked through some of that, if you haven't kind of put to bed or accepted and allowed some of those things to sort of happen, and in your past, and just, you know, move through it, processed it, it will be part of the thing that you actually need to deal with in your recovery. So I'm going to share a story with you now that, you know, I lay in bed, and I kind of knew this. So when I was at my most ill, I lay in bed, and my husband and I had been rowing massively about homeschooling the kids, and I was trying to focus all my energy on the business up here and trying to rebuild the tech side of it. And he was downstairs. And although he was only going in for kind of one day a week, he was just like, we're not sharing the homeschool enough. This is a nightmare. And I cannot do it all. And I was just like, I'm trying to reinvent my business and I'm sick. Just get off my back. And, you know, we've had quite a sort of a difficult relationship probably for around 10 years. And there's a time when he left for a year and then came back, and, you know, we've had counseling and various things, and I think we never really resolved any of it. And I lay in bed and I was just furious. I was just furious. And I thought, Susie, this fury will kill you. You know enough about that kind of emotion. You can't have that kind of emotion and be this ill and have there be a positive outcome? And so I said to him, I'm going to leave you. I'm just saying, you know, when I get better, this is, we're done. And then I kind of was like, okay. And I'd kind of cleared the decks. So I was like, okay, I did the thing that I was most afraid to do. So that's out the way. Now I can focus on getting better. And so I did. I'm now considering unleaving him. Because of course, So it was a bit of a shock for him too, actually.
Like, all I've got to say is, like, yeah, you studied theater, but you definitely brought the drama in that story.
I brought the drama home.
Yeah, I was like, wow.
It's true. I wasn't expecting that, you're thinking.
No. Well, hey.
But nor am I recommending that, you know, the only way to get out of COVID is by leaving your partner. That's not what I'm saying here. But it was a big deal for me. And I started counseling as soon as I was able to kind of to start doing that, because I've trained as a counselor. I knew the importance of it, and I knew that I needed to kind of talk my way through into a place where I was in a better space. And, you know, it really made a big difference. And I think there's a lot of people beginning to understand just that whole mind-body connection, how powerful it is, especially when you're trying to recover from something that's chronic. And so I'm really now being an advocate for that kind of, you know, don't just focus on the symptoms, focus on everything. Just whatever's going on for you, you know, come at it from all angles. So anyone that comes and approaches me in my Facebook group or in my live classes, I'm like, look, if you're upset and stressed about this experience, but, you know, some people have been so traumatized by what was said to them when they were really ill, when the paramedics came, they've been so traumatized that they're sort of stuck there. They need to talk through it. They've got PTSD, essentially. They need to talk through it to allow their body to go, I'm safe enough now to heal. Because until we find that safe space, that point where you can go, oh, okay, I can get better now, you won't recover. And I, you know, I'm a huge advocate of saying, get into counseling, start talking about it, start working on your stress levels, just look at everything. Don't just focus on the symptoms that you're experiencing. They're a byproduct of what's happening inside you. So yeah, but now, you know, a year later, I'm not considering on moving out at the moment.
Wow, that's a relief.
It's a relief, yeah. My husband's pretty pleased.
No, but like, this is the thing. I think it's one of those things where when people go, yeah, like if you hang on to anger, if you hang on to like vengeful thoughts, everything like this, those negative emotions, they don't just bring down that person or whoever you're having that anger focus towards, it takes you down.
Yeah.
What people don't realize, even if they're not really sort of like flared up, angry, it's a constant sort of wearing down. It erodes and like brings you down. You don't realize it, like, but that 1% which might kick in every sort of 2-3 weeks, and if that's gone on for a year, and like, you're like going, oh my lord, goes on for 10 years, you're like, oh my lord, and before you know it, it can manifest in many different ways, in sickness or basically just one day like snapping. And when I say snapping, they're just like, why are you crying? And you're like, I don't know.
No.
I have no idea why this is happening, but you kind of do. It's just a case of that sort of being self-aware and basically sort of really examining what is going on in your life. And I think that's what's been true for many a person over this last year, because there's distractions aplenty, but there's only so much sort of TV, Netflix, and sort of games you can play. And then it's just you and whatever the situation is.
Absolutely.
Face to face. And working through those problems will make people healthier at the end of the day. There are some things which can't be just simply like, oh, you just need to look into yourself and it'll be better. Like when you said PTSD, that is something which is going to take a lot of counseling, and a lot of hand holding along the way to
absolutely
one day say, I'm better, I'm well, yeah, or I can face the world with this new realm.
And it's hard to do that. It's hard to do that by yourself. It's not impossible, but it's hard.
Yeah.
You know, and even people who have had training, you know, I essentially could help someone with PTSD, but I couldn't help myself. I needed to talk my way through it. I needed to have somebody else reflect back what was, you know, what I was experiencing and help to kind of just open it out a little bit for me. Because, you know, we need help. It's okay to ask for help. You know, I know a lot of people who've got long COVID and other long chronic health conditions who need mental health support now, because just the way it's changed their lives is so, so challenging. And it's absolutely fine to go and ask for help, to get counselling, to get onto meds if that's going to help, you know, and it doesn't always help, the meds. The counselling is often the thing, if you stick with it, that will help you sort of unpack something. Because essentially you do need to go back and unpack things, you know. Yep. It's not called baggage for a reason.
Oh, yes. So much of it's carried by so many people.
Right.
But this is something with regards to the 12th coming on up, and if everything keeps on going along the path that it is, I can't remember when in June it's meant to be Freedom Day here in the UK.
Midsummer's Day, the 21st.
21st, there you go. But when the 13th comes, like the 12th, no, 12th comes in April, and then the 21st in June, then it's a case of people be able to get out first wave, maybe get out and have those conversations they need to do. And mm-hmm. by the time summer comes along, midsummer, it'll be a case of, yes, they'll be able to access even more of that. And yeah.
Although, can I just say that it's never been easier to access, you know, if you've got a bit of money, and a lot of people do have a sliding scale, so don't be afraid to look into doing it privately. It has never been easier. I just linked one of my Facebook group up with some who's in North Yorkshire with a counsellor I know down here in Brighton, because it was just like, well, you know, we're not limited now. And actually, for most people who are chronically ill, they need to be at home anyway. They can't go out. They can't get in the car and drive to someone's office and struggle with parking and go in. So it's so much easier to be able to say, do you know what? You can do this from your bed. Just log in. Here's a nice person. They're going to help you. Okay, get on with it. It's never been easier to get help. And it's out there. You know, there are a lot of people out there that are trained in helping people. So if you are listening to this and you're thinking, my God, that's me, just start doing a bit of research, because chances are you could be in conversation with someone in 2 days' time, and then the journey's begun already. So, yeah.
Outstanding. Let me ask this. Like you've started your platform, and yeah. Basically, where do you see, where do you see yourself and your platform, maybe a COVID coach or whatnot, going in, say, the next, let's go with 3 to 4 years time.
I don't know. So I was talking about the guy that I work with, my personal trainer, who's now, you know, he helps me kind of run the business, although he also got COVID and he's had a terrible kind of post-COVID crash. January to now, he had developed chronic fatigue, post-viral fatigue, but his COVID infection was right back in March of last year. He kind of did the 3 weeks thing and then was all right, and then had a massive, and they just basically just gone, it's post-COVID viral, you know, issues, and really, really unwell. But bless him. So, no, he's still working with me, despite the fact that he hasn't actually shown up for much the past while, because there was a time he couldn't even lift his head. It was shocking. And we're talking about a really fit guy, like properly, you know. Ross, I'm just going to say a big hi to you, honey. But he and I have been talking a bit about it. And, you know, I know that there's a kind of a call for us to move into specializing a bit more in this kind of COVID long-term support and help, because we know so much more. I've obviously been invited by the Yoga Therapy Council to come in and talk to some of their teachers and maybe do some kind of keynote talks and maybe some teacher training around, you know, how do you work with this group of people? How do you help them? So that's kind of beginning to brew. And I think, you know, there might be a sort of a program that I set up at some point, because my understanding of COVID is it's not going to go away. You know, I think we're going to be, we're going to be dealing with this for some time. And actually, you know, as someone that's quite happy bringing her skills together and happy kind of standing at the front of a room and going, do you know what? I've got an idea about how we can help ourselves. I'm really, you know, I'm sort of quite motivated to put my skills to good use this way, you know, and I've started turning down some of my clients from the kind of facilitation world, the university world. I've started turning some of them down and going, actually, I'm too busy with this now to take on that work. So I definitely feel a shift in myself. It's like, well, there's a need for this, and I've got the tools and the skills to do something. And I'm also healthy enough to do that. You know, I'm still seeing a cardiologist. I still have a pain in my lungs, but I'm fine.
Mm.
It's okay. I can do it. But I still have my kind of my big toe in the water, so to speak. I understand it, and I don't want to move away from that understanding, because the last 12 months have been hard. And I know that they're going to be hard for lots more people, and lots more people that don't even know that that's going to be them yet, you know. So I think the conversation will just get bigger rather than smaller.
Indeed.
And I will stay online, because this is my yoga studio, right? It's in my house, and I would have people come up here before. That's not happening. They ain't coming back in the house.
It's like, no. No. It's like, come on, can I come in? No.
I've already had some of my students that, you know, would come in before say, well, can't we just have a reunion class? I'm like, not in here, you can't.
It's like there's a river in Africa called the Nile. No. It's like, no.
Exactly.
It's like, it's like,
what's happening?
No.
I said, if you gave me COVID, even if I've had my vaccination and I just got it mildly, I would be so cross with you.
You're not going to really punch him, are you now? Because you're like, yeah, I'm going to take you. No, then again. That's like, hit him, cough. Oh, no.
No. There's just not enough air in here for me to share it with people and their germs. I'm not up for that. So yes, I think I'm definitely going to be keeping the online platform. I think, you know, we will be in and out of, you know, various forms of restrictions, I think, for some time. This virus is a very clever one, and I think if we can protect ourselves from dying against it, great, but I think we won't be able to protect ourselves from getting it. And again, we don't know how it's going to be with this kind of longer version. So we'll see is where I'm at, basically. But yes, for now, I think I'm going to be spending a lot more time in this room on Zoom.
Okay.
But it works, you know, because I reach people all over. I've got people from Denmark, from Belgium, from Holland, from Yorkshire, from Ireland, from Scotland, from Cornwall, you know, and they all come in and it's great. And I don't need them in here with me. They're all perfectly happy to be at home. So
I like it. Just stay at home, please. Everyone
stay at home. Yeah, yeah. Well, especially if you're not well, you need to stay at home anyway. You know, most of them can only just get onto their mats. The last thing they need to do is get out of the house and get a bus somewhere and then, you know, get home again. It's exhausting. So no, it works. It works really well. And actually, I was only using this Zoom format for one-to-one presentation coaching before COVID happened. I'd never even thought about teaching a class via, you know, via this apparatus. No. And it just one, I did one session and went, oh, that was easy. Well, that was really great.
Let me just say, get on YouTube. Look, there is opportunity.
Everyone's on YouTube. I mean, I don't know enough. I'm really, my tech knowledge is very limited. I should probably go to some masterclass on how to grow your YouTube channel. But yeah, I do have the Yoga for COVID Recovery YouTube channel, but there's only about four things posted on it. Yeah. I just need to post a few more things. Yeah, there we go.
What I'll simply say to you is like, I can't remember her name, but my lady, she used to do these yoga classes where like she would do the 30-day yoga challenges and everything like that.
Oh yeah.
And basically, Can't remember. Well, like I had to look up, I had to look up the tube map thing. And yes, it was Oakwood, which was the train. The
tube Oakwood, tube. Yes, Oakwood tube. Well done, thank you.
Yes, but she did like sort of 30-day sort of like challenges, and then basically Adrian. Yeah, that's her name.
Yoga with Adrian. Yes.
Yeah. Adrian, and she will do sort of live classes as well as like the that's different right. weekly, monthly focus on different areas. But like, yeah, I think you should do that. If you're not going to do a podcast, like definitely get on that to make things happen.
I can see, I look, you know, because obviously that's quite a densely packed market.
Well,
I think I'm quite niche with my COVID thing at the moment.
Well, all I would simply say is, yeah. Your niche, that means there's an opportunity right out there.
Well, yes, so that's what I mean. Yeah, I mean, I would never go into competition with Yoga with Adrienne. Although, you know, I think my style is probably, I like a bit of fun. So I'm always, there's always moments of real laughter in my classes. In fact, just before lockdown happened, I was about to do a stand-up gig because I'd been on a stand-up course and was so ready. I'd even sold tickets, and then they were like, no, it's the 15th of March, the venue was closed. And it was like, oh. but yeah, I do, you know, if people like to have fun and then also do some yoga and feel good and, you know, all of that stuff, it's a really nice mix. So
why did you do a stand-up course, may I ask?
Yeah, you can ask, because I think I said early on in the interview, I love laughter and I love making people laugh. Now, when I was doing my performing arts degree, I did do a stand-up element module as part of my course. There was a great tutor called Hugh Thomas, still around, still doing stuff with comedy. And I did it. I signed up to the module because it was terrifying. You know, I would read it on the list of choices and go, oh my God. And I thought, well, I'm here to do that. You know, I'm here to learn and stretch and push myself. So why not? And I signed up and I loved it. But I realized at that age, you know, I wasn't damaged enough. I wasn't broken by life enough to turn it into something funny that other people would really get. So I said, you know, okay, I'm going to wait till I'm 40 and then I'll do it. And actually 40 came and went, and then, you know, kids came and I just got to the point where I signed up in February of 2020 and was doing the course and was just like, I have so much material. And was really, really having the time of my life with a whole bunch of people that were on the course with me. And then we stopped the course. So actually all of the people that have been coming to my classes, they get a little bit of me, you know. Obviously I'm also, you know, I can drop into that really calm kind of zen space as well as a yoga teacher, but at the beginning I'm always a bit like, you know, chat and a bit of banter, and you know, that it's fun. And actually, if you're on your own in your house or you're just doing the same thing routine wise lockdown, having that kind of interactive banter and a bit of fun and a bit of Susie Bolt comedy, you know, really makes people laugh. And I love that, you know, that feeds me because I can just see their faces smiling and, you know, it makes me really happy. It kind of fills me, you know, it's like one of those things that I'm not afraid of it. I'm not afraid to kind of put myself up there and say something silly.
Outstanding. I like that. I like that a lot. you know, I'm going to have to reveal, Susie. That, like, I have been keeping a secret from you, and like, yes, I am a being of supreme cosmic power, and I can grant you one wish and one wish alone. And before you say anything, you can't wish for world peace. You can't write down a list of things on a piece of paper and go, I wish everything on this list was taken care of. And look, you can't wish for COVID to be gone, like, because look, I had to pull extreme powers to get Dolly Parton involved. And look, there's only one power higher than Dolly Parton. And this might be controversial. I can't be calling on the powers of Beyonce because, oh good God, I don't have that.
She's busy.
Yes, I don't want to do that. Oh God. Yeah. The amount of deals I had to just get Dolly involved. good God. You have no idea. It's like, so what would your one wish be?
Sitting here right now on a Monday morning at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, so it's not a morning. I guess it's a wish that's actually something that's physically possible. So that would be to get the story of what you can do to help yourself recover from a kind of long-term chronic illness out there more, so that people understand that they have power, that they have the ability to heal themselves. I think that's my wish, and that's what I'm working on. That's a tangible outcome. And so, to kind of spread the story that there's help out there, that's the wish.
Okay, I'll get working on that.
So yeah, could you fix that for me, please?
I have a queue system, so yes, I'll get on that. Okay. I was like, watch out for the next couple of months. We shall see what happens from there. But yeah, can you tell the lovely people how they can get hold of you, how they can find you out there on the big wide web?
That's pretty easy. So I have a website that's probably the easiest thing to find, which is called 360mindbodysoul.co.uk. But also I have a website called susiebolt.co.uk. If you can't remember the name of the thing, just my name would be enough. But 360 Mind Body Soul, it kind of talks, that's where you'll find the platform, the wellbeing platform that we've set up, and also a little bit of information about the COVID recovery classes. And they can email me if somebody's listening to this and they think, well, I'd like to be part of that Facebook group, which is for people with long COVID, where we've got a few thousand people, all kind of self-supporting each other, which is really great, and sharing great information. Then again, you can just email me and I can send you the link to that. But if you're good at looking for Facebook groups, it is called Yoga and Meditation for Gentle COVID Recovery. I mean, it is what it says on the tin. There we go. But yes, I am out there, or just Susie Bolt. There is only one of me, S-U-Z-Y-B-O-L-T. If you Google my name, everything about me comes up. And there's not many people that can say that, but you know, if nothing else, you could find out pretty much everything else about me. I'm glad the internet was only really invented from a certain point onwards, but yeah, all of my professional stuff is there. So, you know, search in whichever way you choose, and it will be me that you find.
Yes, I think the conversation about your pre-internet days will be saved for another date in time.
No one's early 20s are worth sharing.
That's always down to perspective. I always find.
I may have made it sound much more interesting than it really was. I think it's good to have a bit of mystique, right?
Oh, yes. Yes. The coat of mystery. That's the reason why it's there. Susie, I've got to say thank you very much for you coming on today. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me so much. It's been really great to hang out and chat with you.
Oh, always. And let me just say to you, my friends, my life warriors out there, please, thank you very much for staying here so far, watching the show. Please stay safe, stay well, be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic. Be all the positive bees you can be in this world, and then some. Have a great day, guys. Peace.
Bye.
And we are...